Good morning, cricket fans, and welcome to the Catch It podcast.
Oh, what a catch!
I'm Andrew Lush, and I started this podcast to have some interesting and insightful conversations about analytics and the stats behind the action, and to develop myself as a presenter.
Good!
Oh, actually, oh, brilliant!
I hope you enjoy our discussions and debates.
That is an absolutely outstanding catch.
Arjun Verma, welcome to the Catch It podcast, the COO of the great app that I use in most of my days at Lancashire Cricket now, with the Northwest Funder, the Full Track AI. You've worked with, a little bit of an intro, you've worked with the White Ferns cricket team, you've worked with Cricket Australia, you've worked with various different teams in the England setup. How are you doing today?
Doing fabulous, and thanks for having me, Andrew.
Oh, absolutely. So from looking at your record, you work with multiple full trackers now integrated with multiple different English first class counties, Australian state sides. I've seen various different Indian players and players who play in the IPL posting about it on their socials. How does that feel to that you have a product that is being used so widely in the cricket community?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely. So as you're probably aware, most of us in India grow up dreaming of being cricketers. And that dream was not to be for myself. You know, I graduated from school, went to study in the US, but was able to keep up with cricket and to be able to apply what I learned at college, what I've studied over the last many years, to the one environment that I love most, i.e. sport and more specifically cricket. It's fabulous. And, you know, when you start out as a young company, probably the biggest validation you can have is that the best players in the world want to use your product. And we were very fortunate in that we were able to, one, get that validation very early, and two, use the iterative feedback that we got from these environments, whether it's the domestic teams in Australia or the counties in the UK and such, to enhance the product and eventually build it up over time. And now we have, I think, over 100,000 people using it across the world, with, of course, our marquee customers being all the professions that you mentioned.
We'll get all back into everything full track in a while, but I just want to take it back to those days before you were a co-founder of a leading AI, AI ball tracking software and app. Tell me about your upbringing and tell me about what kind of sparked that love for cricket and, well, sport in general.
Absolutely. So I grew up in India. You know, we have about 1.5 billion people here, and there's 1.5 billion cricket fans, and I was one of them. To be fair, my love for cricket was probably most sparked by my grandfather, and he was, you know, he played cricket till the age of 52, sort of club cricketer like many others, and then, you know, instilled that love within myself, many other members of my family. You know, my uncle played cricket, his kid, my cousin, he plays for Hong Kong. So cricket has been really, really deeply ingrained sort of in the family since I was really young.
And you're never gonna be a footballer, you know,
not as I recall. It was never on the horizon. I don't think I was ever gonna be a cricketer either, just because I wasn't good enough. But
there was always gonna be cricket involved in your life.
Yes, I was always gonna be cricket involved. In fact, a lot of my, you know, closest friends growing up, in fact, every single one of my closest friends growing up, either has played cricket professionally or has tried to. And so, you know, cricket has been deeply ingrained, sort of family, friends, everything. And yeah, when I went over to school, to college, that is, in the US, no less. And this was back, you know, 5, 7, 8 years ago, when cricket wasn't as, you know, as far wide and popular as it is now in the US, I became captain of the cricket club at my college. And so I always kept up with it. It's always been this spark in my heart for cricket, you know, all the way leading back to my grandfather who instilled it in all of us. But yeah, that's sort of the roots and where the cricket comes from.
A rich history of cricket in your family. Going on to your schooling in the US. So you went to Harvard, is it? And you went to Harvard and you studied computer science. What was it like going from living in India to going to college? Well, I'm going to call it university because I've never called it college in my life. To university in the States. What was it like being in that environment at Harvard and studying computer science, but still with that love for cricket in you?
Absolutely. So the great thing about liberal arts in the US, and Harvard is a liberal arts college, is that sort of they promote, you know, fields of learning and disciplines in a vast array of things. So it's not a trade school where you're going, you're just studying what you're studying, and that's where your focus stays. So not only do we learn from different fields, whether that's, you know, while I was at Harvard, I took courses in geography and religion and sciences, and I studied computer science, but you sort of do a diversity of things. And similarly, they support extracurricular activities like your sport, et cetera. So obviously we weren't a varsity sport, but varsity sport is heavily funded at a lot of colleges in the US, including Harvard. And so is club sport. And that's what we were. Because just because cricket isn't a varsity sport in the US yet, we hope we'll be
coming
soon.
Coming.
but yeah, so it was a fabulous experience as it pertains to going from India to the US. I'd been fortunate that my sister had actually gone there 5 years ago. So I'd had sort of through her a lot of you know, support and experiences that had helped me in the transition.
That's quite funny because I live in Manchester now, and my brother had lived in Manchester before I moved here. So it's always good when a sibling goes there and can test the waters first.
Absolutely. So that always made it easier. It's like when an opener comes in, lays down the foundation for number three to come in and then play a nice innings.
You can then walk in and be like, right, okay, I know what's happening here. So McGill has actually taken off the last ball.
If you're calling my sister Rohit Sharma and me Virat Kohli, I'll take the compliment.
So you had your time at Harvard in terms of got many experiences, and I was looking down your resume, and one thing that stood out, you did an apprenticeship with the CPL team, the Jamaica Talawars.
Yes.
How did that come about? And what was that like? The players that I looked down the team list, the team got to the Eliminator in 2018. You were working with players like David Miller, Ross Taylor, Glenn Phillips, Shahid Afridi, and West Indian greats like Andre Russell, Samu Badri, and Kimar Roach. What was that like? And how did that come about?
That was one of the most random yet memorable experiences of my life. And, you know, as I said, a lot of my friends back home in India have pursued professional cricket, are pursuing professional cricket and such. But that was a fairly high level of cricket. I didn't actually play on the team, but I was in the training squad for the couple of weeks before the tournament started.
Oh, wow.
How that happened.
I thought you were like an intern-esque. Like, I thought you were like working around. I didn't realize you were actually in the training squad. That's incredible.
So the American College Cricket League, which at that time had some 1,400 players, fairly well organized league back when I was playing. And as I said, I was captain of my college. And so I was fortunate in 2018 to win MVP, Most Valuable Player, for that year across the league. And the award for that was to travel to Jamaica and participate in the training camp for with the Talawas. And you know, I was fortunate to be that player. And you know, I was at Sabana Park with many of the players you mentioned. Some of them hadn't actually showed up for the training camp. So, as I recall, GP Glenn Phillips, Imad Wasim, Ross Taylor, Andre Russell, they were all there. And maybe one of the highlights.
Pretty good name.
Oh, absolutely. Every time someone asks me my sort of highlight in my whole association with cricket, it's not full track. It's back when I was playing this practice training game in Sabana Park with the Talawas. And there is a scorecard somewhere out there, somewhere. I may never find it. No one might ever find it. But there is a scorecard somewhere out there where it says, bowled Arjun Verma, caught Andre Russell, and the batsman was Ravman Bowell. And that was by far the highlight.
Dig on Cricket Archives to see if we can find that. Cricket Archives is a great site, but it delves deep. And weirdly enough, I found my grandfather on that, which is,
goodness, wow. That is incredible.
Minor counties. So,
goodness. What county is that?
So he paid for, oh gosh, I think it was Devonshire, or I think I'm going to be wrong. And if Jenny Lush, my gran, is listening, I'm very sorry if I got that wrong. I might Might be Berkshire. Dorset. Last answer. I'm going to go Dorset. Not sure. I think I'm wrong, but I know for sure he scored. He wasn't much of a batter. He was a bowler. And later in his career, he didn't really progress because he had a hip problem. But he struggled with that for quite a while. But he scored a 70 not out against one of the other minor counties. And I was just like, wow. Never knew he had it in. But that's an incredible experience for a young cricketer to go and train. Did you ever think that from growing up in India, you'd be on the same training pitch as the likes of Andre Russell?
Oh, absolutely not. In fact, you know, that was something that was, as I said, one of the most random but memorable experiences of my life. And I mean, fabulous for the American League to have that tie up. And I think they still might actually be sending one player every year to Jamaica or somewhere in the CPL. But yeah, absolutely had not expected. I mean, I hadn't expected to play cricket at all following, you know, leaving for the US. So it was a pleasant surprise. To say the least.
Absolutely. So you go from Harvard, you graduate. What was the inspiration for Full Track? And what was the moment that you were like, I can see a break in the market here? Or what was that spark moment?
Absolutely. So this is a story with one of my co-founders, of course, whose name is Vic. And so he was 3 years senior to me. He was the guy who'd given me captaincy of Harvard Cricket Club when he graduated.
It was a Harvard affair then.
And so he'd gone and worked at this company called Second Spectrum in Switzerland, where, you know, he built ball tracking systems for the NBA, for the EPL and such. And so he's now a PhD, but even back then he was this expert in computer vision and AI. And he'd come back over and I was about to graduate. And I'd actually gone to him to discuss this interview that I was giving for a job at Tesla in the computer vision department. And so that's where it all started. And, you know, while we were catching up and chatting,
it's that
we were
little country company, Tesla, tiny little, really niche.
very niche. Yeah. but also focused on computer vision stuff like Full Track, as you know, similar sized companies, you know.
Similar space, like looking at ball tracking.
So I'd gone to him to chat about that. We were sort of reminiscing on our days at, you know, Harvard Cricket Club. And one of the big things that we always competed on was obviously how fast we bowled, because we were both fast bowlers, or medium fast bowlers, probably more accurately. and so as we were chatting / arguing, you know, he started telling me about how sort of those sorts of arguments that we know are widespread across essentially the entire world, where grassroots cricketers don't know really anything about the data and that, you know, their speeds and things like that, even till date. We see this every day, like grassroots cricketers are guessing how fast they bowl based off of what they've seen on TV. And it's very different seeing something on TV and knowing it. And it's the same with coaches, grassroots coaches, which are one step above sort of the recreational cricketers that we were. Even they haven't really had access to the kind of data that, you know, we often debate or find valuable to improve on. And Vic started telling me how he built systems that sort of, you know, do ball tracking and things like that. But those sort of algorithms can now be run on mobile phones, because mobile phone processors have advanced so much over the last decade that an iPhone is basically as powerful as a computer used to be, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And, you know, that was a very interesting idea to me. And in the moment, you don't necessarily say, oh, let's start a company. But, you know, in the weeks that followed, you know, I had more conversations without him. And then we sort of started it out as a side project just to see, is this even going to work? You know, it was COVID. There was not much to lose. You were sitting at home, you go out to the backyard, you're trying something out, you know, worst case, it's a project that failed. You know, you learned something about technology and you're like, okay, it doesn't work. Best case, you build a company that's used by all the teams you mentioned and hopefully more. So that's where it all started. And again, just grateful that, you know, we've made it as far as we have and hopefully a long way to go.
Did you go to the Tesla interview?
Interestingly, I did go to the Tesla interview. I didn't end up getting the job. And
well, I'm going to say thank you very much, Tesla, for not. Otherwise, my day to day would look very different in this winter training.
It inspired something, you know.
So looking forward, you've got the inspiration, you've got the spark, you start building a product. What would you say is the hardest moment that you found with your co-founder? Sorry, I've missed his name.
Vic. V-I-K.
What was the hardest moment that you and Vic found in your progression to where you are now?
That's a loaded question. I don't think I could narrow it down to one singular moment. Honestly, some of the hardest moments have been in the last few days. And there's always a hardest moment, and there's always a fabulous moment, and it's this constant wave of, you know, it's usually a wave that progresses upward. So what used to be considered a big deal is now sort of a smaller deal. But you know, there's just hard moments along the way. I would say, if I really had to pick, you know, there were moments early on where, and this is true. So now we're launching a match technology. You know, currently we work in the training environment, but soon we're launching a match product. And in every case of launching a new product or a new feature, there is a period of iteration. So, you know, you put something out there and you sort of get users' feedback. You try to see how the market takes it, and then you iterate on the product. And your vision for the product, whether that's your vision for 6 months down the line or 1 year down the line or 2 years down the line, is always going to be different from what a random person who doesn't work in the company or on the product views the product as. So if I come out to you today and I say, all right, I'm going to track how far the batter hits it, and I know that there's XYZ that can go wrong, when I give that to you, you're not going to view it with that. You know, you might, but the average user is not going to view it in that light.
Yeah,
the code, in that light. And exactly. And as is the case with all AI, things develop over time. With data, the AI gets better. With iteration, the technology gets better. But there is that period of where you need to let it out and then see how the users react, use their feedback, use data to augment the technology, and then grow it. And that phase of launching a new sort of, and it was most sort of pronounced when we were an entirely new technology that nobody had heard of. You know, anyways, people have been very skeptical of AI, et cetera, and cricket, because there have been a lot of, you know, times where it's been tried and it's failed. And rightfully so, people are skeptical that something will work. And sort of you really build up that social proof over time as you hear from trusted sources, all right, this works, et cetera. So some of the hardest moments for us have definitely been, you know, launching a new feature, or, you know, the hardest by far was the initial phases where we were trying to even trying to get people to try something is very tough when the initial reaction is always, oh, it's AI and all this. Everyone says it'll work, but it won't work. And that's why for us, the absolute biggest priority when we were really small and really young was accuracy. The only thing that mattered was accuracy, because that is the one thing that had never actually been provided. And once we could build people's trust on that, that's when things sort of, you know, doubled over like dominoes, in the sense that, you know, one, so to say, respected person in the space used it and said, oh, this actually works. And then they tell someone, and then that someone tells someone. And over time, that network spreads. Obviously, it took us now 2-3 years to do that. But, you know, the initial phases of getting people's trust, even to just try the product. I'm not talking about use it recurrently. I'm not talking about pay for it. I'm saying even just to try it is quite a hurdle when it's a new technology, and people can't align, obviously, with the vision you have internally of where the product will go and how it'll improve. So that was sort of where it all, you know, I'd say the hardest moments were.
Yeah, I can understand where you're coming from with that. Where was, can you remember which was the first professional team that kind of took a punt on you? Or
absolutely. And you know, always grateful. Chris Hyten from Derby County Cricket Club.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's at this point, I know him quite well. He's been a dear friend. And most importantly, he's been, you know, brutally honest about the good and the bad about the technology. But the one thing that he did, which then led to sort of Giles Lindsay, who was also sort of from the same network and now with the Rice on Royals, those two sort of took punts on the technology early on. And I think they were in that regard pivotal in terms of growing in the social proof that we have now, and also just our own confidence in the fact that this can be used in professional setups.
That's interesting, because I always thought it was the Australians that came on board, the Australian state sides came on board first time. But it was Chris when he was at, well, he still is at Derbyshire, but when he was at Derbyshire with their, as the analyst in their first team setup.
Absolutely. So it was the Australian sides, once they picked up on it, were very, very quick to sort of spread across, you know, all the states and all the sort of national setup, et cetera. But Chris was the first one sort of, you know, in the back end to use it. And then we have partnerships with a number of the Australian states. And the reason that, you know, you might have seen more of them is because they have very large followings. And, you know, Absolutely. We do have social partnerships.
When you have Rashid Khan trying out your app, it's a little bit better than a player at Derbyshire. No offense to Derbyshire cricket. They've got a great setup there. But it's a little bit of a different situation.
Yeah, we've been fortunate again, you know, to work with the Strikers, which is where obviously Rashid Khan was, you know, featured in one of our ads.
Yeah, and you have Amanda Jade Wellington, who played for us last year at the Manchester Originals. So
absolutely,
I was very excited when I saw her on one of the videos. It was actually before we signed her. So I was very excited when she came on board. But
that's fabulous.
So with that kind of you talk about your in-game product. How is that looking, and where does the future look like for your idea? And I'm sure you and Vic have constant conversations about this. But what is the future looking like for FullTrack AI?
Absolutely. So you know, when we started out, to be fully honest, we didn't even expect to ever be able to do matches. Reason being,
there's
a lot of elements, and just taking away all the human elements, the technological elements, you know, when you're using it in a training setting, you're putting it on a tripod, that means the phone is stable. But when you use it in a match setting, you can't put a tripod there. And so the only way to do it is you put it on the umpire in some shape or form, and then come questions of, you know, how do you put it on an umpire so that it's not obstructing the umpire, it's not annoying to the umpire, it's not a lot of work for the umpire. So there's all those human questions, but most importantly, there's a question of the umpire's moving, so the phone's not stable anymore. And fortunately, we have an incredible R&D team in the US, and they were able to build stabilization algorithms that now allow us to do the exact same thing, but from a moving camera. And so that is what has been beta tested recently and is now being released sort of in various parts of the world with a lot of our existing partners, et cetera, as well. And yeah, that's sort of the next big step in FullTrack.
Big step.
Absolutely. So, you know, people have all the way from pro to club cricket to school cricket, you know, cricketers and coaches have adored sort of what we've offered, but there is no doubt that offering that for matches is five times more valuable. And, you know, that's great. And I mean, even when we used to pitch to investors back in the day, we never mentioned that, you know, someday we're going to do matches. But now it's sort of this windfall thing where, you know, we know we can do matches, and the market is just, to be fully honest, the recreational cricketer doesn't even fall within our market for the training product, because the truth is, recreational cricketers like myself, we don't train. We'll go on a Sunday and we'll play a match, but we don't train. We don't care about our...
we do not...
We're there.
Are you saying the recreational cricketer is not out there three times a week training their guts off?
the truth is, we will go to a match on a Sunday expecting to play a Virat Kohli-esque innings, be absolutely dreadfully annoyed when we don't, and then come back the next week without a single day of training and expect to do the exact same thing we failed at the prior week. And eventually, you know, you come to realize the recreational cricketer does not train, and they don't care about training data as much as you might hope, but they care a lot about data from matches. And so this is sort of one of the, you know, we obviously have what we call the badgers in every club. In every team, there's maybe two badgers who will look at the data, who will want to use full track, who do love sort of having the videos from every training session, etc. But you will have 11 people who want the wickets that they took in a match, or who want to see the speed that they took those wickets at, or who want to see their batting highlights from those games. And so our match product really opens up the entirety of the cricket market, and that includes state ball and tennis ball as well. And so that's where sort of full track is now headed. And you know, the again expanding sort of to it's actually sort of counterintuitive, because to get the product to work in less controlled environments, which happens as you go sort of further down from in the pyramid, you have to build the technology to be even more robust. And that actually benefits most our enterprise customers and our, you know, marquee customers, because, you know, as we develop the technology more and more, they're able to use it for performance data, which is obviously immensely valuable at the pro level. So yeah, that's sort of the vision for the next couple of years.
Just to pull you up on one thing there, I'll pull you up, just to ask you kind of, so tape ball cricket is insane in India. There are a couple of IPL players that have been scouted from tape ball leagues and stuff. Did you play tape ball cricket growing up?
Sadly not, or maybe it's a positive that I didn't, because I played hardball cricket, and often the two aren't necessarily really? Beneficial.
You choose one or the other.
Oh, no. I meant to say that, you know, playing a lot of tape ball or tennis ball cricket might get you used to certain technical or other things that aren't beneficial on the hardball side. And so, you know, I can't say I played much tape ball cricket growing up. Tennis ball cricket, which doesn't include any tape, essentially. Yeah. I did
don't
play
have
about
the ball just doing that.
exactly. And so that sort of, you know, when I don't think I could think of one person I know in India who grew up not having played some tennis ball cricket. But you know, I was never super serious about sort of that sort of thing, just because when I played cricket, I wanted to play sort of the hardball format.
Yeah, understood. And just, you talked about, you're obviously a tech company based out of the United States. Yep. How do you feel about the growth of cricket in the US and the growth of leagues like the MLS? How do you feel about American soccer? the MLC, the American the Major League Cricket. How do you feel about the growth and how that's going to change the cricketing landscape?
Yeah, for sure. So I mean, how I feel about it is obviously immensely positive.
Quite happy.
I'm very happy about it as an American cricketing company, with America being the largest sports market in the world, where now the, you know, second most followed sport in the world is sort of expanding. It's fabulous for the sport. It's fabulous for us as a company, and very excited about it. As far as sort of specifics go, you know, the 2024 World Cup, T20 World Cup, and the 2028 inclusion in the Olympics, those are obviously the two big events, besides obviously the MLC, which, you know, has been in the works for many years now and has finally come to fruition, and looked like the first season was incredible. So all of that is just creating this whole massive hype and environment around it that hopefully just propels the sport up. Sort of similar to how MLS was, you know, a decade ago. You know, everyone was talking about it. Everyone was following it. I've had a lot of friends from the US, born and bred in the US, no links to sort of, they don't have origins from cricket playing countries, you know, from past generations. They've really been, I had this friend from North Carolina that I used to play basketball with in Boston. And, you know, one day he sort of had a chat with me about what I do. And he's like, oh, cricket, I actually watch it. I was like, no way. And he's like, yeah, you know, every now and then there's this league that comes up and I watch it. And it was, you know, a pleasant surprise. And, you know, if, you know, that sort of thing is happening at scale, I can only imagine that it's going to be a very, very positive outlook for cricket in America in the coming years.
Well, I'm just conscious on time, and thank you very much for the time that you've given us today.
Absolutely.
What are the next kind of, for anybody listening, what are the next kind of things that people can see from Full Track in the next couple of kind of coming up in the next couple of months?
Yeah, for sure. So again, as I said, the match product is sort of dead center focus for us right now. So what you should see, and so this is really the craziest part, we've actually built You've probably used Full Track a lot in your training environments, and it is heavily accurate because we focused on that for the last many years. But it's still the fully automated algorithms that we currently run were not accurate enough to do DRS, because DRS, you're talking about inches. You know, that's when you're talking about picking sort of whether or not someone's out in a grassroots cricket match, or any cricket match, you're talking about inches. Whereas our technology currently is probably accurate to about a ball. And the way
that companies like Hawkeye do that is with the multiple. So
exactly.
When I'm turning up early for a day in, for example, in the 100, I'll see the Hawkeye analyst, and he will be tracking the cameras from multiple angles on the pitch. How have you come around that?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, of course, the more cameras you add, the more it helps, but also the slower it makes it, the more complicated it makes it, the more expensive it makes it. And so there's really a trade-off between how expensive, how advanced, and how much time, or how, it, you know, those sorts of things. And there's always a balance. Unfortunately, again, with the advancement of both cameras and the processing chips in phones, we're able to do now a lot more from a single camera than we would have 5 years ago. And you know, it's the same for any technology, whether you're using five or six cameras. The point is, as the cameras get better from a single viewpoint, and as the processing chips get better, you're just going to get faster, cheaper, and more accurate from a single camera. And fortunately, we've been able to develop more advanced algorithms that are much more expensive for us to actually run, but they're actually much more accurate and can be used even for DRS at the grassroots level, which is, we believe, will be massive over the coming years. Because you know, you can imagine going to a second 11 club cricket game and the umpire having a Full Track phone sort of in their chest pocket. And not only are you getting all the data from the speeds and the swings and the pitch maps and all of that, but you've worked all Sunday. You haven't trained a single day, but you've waited all week
You've worked all week. You've patched the captain's messages to come to net. And then
you show up on a Sunday and you get given out second ball, incorrect decision in your second 11 match, and your whole week is ruined. And it's not ruined because you didn't train. It's ruined because the umpire's decision may have been a little questionable. Or you're the umpire and you've actually given the correct decision, and this annoying player is blaming you for the incorrect decision and blaming you for ruining their week, which is equally bad. In either case, the solution, and that's what, you know, DRS did many years ago in international cricket, but the solution is an objective, accurate solution for grassroots DRS. And that's what we now have, in addition to all the data and smart video tools that we already offer. So that's hopefully what you should look out for in the coming year across the UK and hopefully the world.
That is very exciting. Thank you very much, Arjun, for joining us on the Catch Up Podcast. It has been a brilliant 30 minutes. I've really enjoyed this. I look forward to that coming out product. And hopefully very soon we'll see in-game DRS. And I think it'll be incredible, and it will change the game. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Andrew. It was great being here.